Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock, talking baseball as we do 52 weeks a year, every Saturday morning. And it is a pleasure now to go out to our guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the pride of Oak Lawn High School and Elmhurst College, former pre- and post-game White Sox broadcaster, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, Dave Wills. Dave, good morning. Welcome back inside the clubhouse. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me, and I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking out the window of my press box right now, and the phrase is looking out the window because I still have the window shut. It looks great outside, but I know it's a little chilly, and these windows might stay shut. This Chicago guy is more of a Florida guy now, and not used to 37 degrees anymore.
Will Z, welcome in, and always great to talk to you, always great to catch up. I hope the family's doing great. It's nice that you're home a little bit for Easter weekend here with the family. That's pretty cool. But looking at your ball club right now, obviously most people look at the American League East as the most difficult division, not only in baseball now, but maybe, just maybe, one of the most difficult divisions in the history of division play going back to 1969. Your thoughts about where the Rays are at right now and the challenges ahead?
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Joe Maddon days when he was our manager, he used to term the American League East as not only the toughest division in baseball, but maybe the toughest division in sports. I mean, and, you're looking at a Rays team that's challenging the big boys, New York, Boston, now Toronto. I mean, Toronto's got an entire country behind him now and a pretty good TV network situation going. And even Baltimore, which has fallen on some hard times, should be a heck of a lot better. But you know what? We've been the beast of the East the last couple of years. We are the defending division champs, not once but twice. We went 40-20 in 2020 during the COVID abbreviated season, and I don't think that was a fluke. Obviously made it to the World Series and lost to a better team in the Dodgers. And then last year, knew we were going to be a pretty good team despite making a couple of moves. And next thing you know, when the dust settles, even losing Tyler Glass now, we had some young guys come in and really pick up the slack, beginning with Shane McClanahan, even like the kid who pitched yesterday, Drew Rasmussen, and down the line. We made some moves on the run, opened up a lane for Wander Franco. So we won 100 games last year. So it's kind of like, I think I read an article finally about 2 weeks ago where somebody said, why are we still surprised by what the Tampa Bay Rays do? I'm not surprised. We're a good team. We're a great organization. This team, as I said, won the division last year, and then every one of its affiliates made it to the postseason. So that tells you, too, that the minor league system is pretty well stocked. But we're struggling right now. Andy and I were talking about it last night during our game. We look like we're just a tick off. I mean, Wander is a special talent. After having a couple of tough days, he came back out last night and hit the ball all over the place. And, we've got a couple other guys that are doing some things. G-Man Choi drove the ball a couple of times yesterday, but the rest of the lineup right now is a little more missed than hit. So we're kind of like, as I said before, anybody who knew me growing up in Oak Lawn knew that I used to drive around in my dad's old 69 Vista Cruiser station wagon, and it took a little while for that baby to warm up, but once it did, it would cruise along. And even last year when we won 100 games, guys, we were 19-19 at one time. So this isn't a surprise to see us struggle a little bit out of the gates.
Dave, Dylan Cease really was dealing last night. 5 2/3, one run, and he had everything working for him. Today, Michael Kopech goes against Corey Kluber, and you're going to see likely another young right-handed power arm with a ton of potential. What is your perception of the White Sox from afar, and what you saw last night? Is this a team that you think, boy, if they can stay healthy, if they can get it all together, and those are huge ifs with this White Sox team, that this is a team that has World Series, legitimate World Series aspirations?
I think the healthy part is what is a big key for this team. I mean, you look at their everyday lineup, and I know they're without a couple of guys right now still. I just saw Josh Harrison walking around the tunnel. I think he was coming to talk to you guys, as a matter of fact, just about a half hour ago. But they've got a great lineup. They've got a really good pitching staff. The back end of the bullpen, I know Liam Hendricks struggles. I mean, I hear all from Sox fans. We're not good right now. We're hurt. We're this. The team I watched last night sure looked pretty good. And the team I've been reading about a lot over the last few months is pretty good. Now, the key is going to be staying healthy. We see a couple of people from the American League, and one of them from the American League Central, the Twins, a lot during spring training. And while they agreed that the White Sox might have the best roster, their biggest concern for the White Sox was if a handful of guys go down, they didn't think that the White Sox had the minor league backups to come in and fill the void that you would need in order to make it through a 162-game schedule. But if they can stay healthy, they've got the pitching staff that's set up to do some damage from the beginning of the rotation, top of the rotation with Giolito and company, to the back of the bullpen. And then their offensive lineup, Andy and I were talking about it yesterday during the broadcast. You know, we see the Blue Jays, we see the Yankees and the Red Sox. They don't take a back seat to anybody.
That's the big booming voice of my good friend and Dave's good friend, Dave Wills, the voice of the Tampa Rays. Now, is it 18 or 19 years, Willsy?
18. This is our 18th season, and it's hard to believe. I was just telling somebody that last night, and they're like, "You've been gone for what, about 12?" I said, "This is 18." They've been great to us, and it's been a great run. And you know, my timing was a little off. I was here until 2004. Maybe my timing was right for White Sox fans. You know, I left. They win a World Series. I go to the Rays, and I get Lou Piniella to quit managing for a little while. But ever since then, it's been a pretty good run.
Well, Z, growing up here in Chicagoland, and now you and I have been friends for, I think, 37, 38 years, which is amazing. We were in business together when you first started out. Pat Foley has hung him up and gone the other way. Your impact as a young broadcaster by the great voices of Chicago and the Pat Foley's of the world when you were on your way up the chain.
Oh, my God, how can you not be impacted? I mean, growing up listening to Harry Carey do the White Sox and then Harry and Jimmy there in the mid-70s to the late-70s. And, you know, obviously, even though I wasn't a Cub fan, you know, hearing Jack Brickhouse, Vince Lloyd, Lou Boudreau down the line. And then you get to the hockey and, you know, Lloyd Pettit. To this day, I tell the story that I still used to think that, you know, the Blackhawks would walk by Lloyd Pettit before the game and go, "Hi, I'm number, you know, I'm number two, White. I'm number three, Keith Magus. And I'm number four, I'm number five, Bill," you know, and this going, you know, number nine, Bobby Hall, number 10, Dennis Hall, and Jim Pappin. And I didn't know he got rosters and all that other stuff. But, you know, then the transition over to Pat Foley. Jim Durham was absolutely spectacular. Joe McConnell, I mean, you were spoiled growing up in Chicago because of the incredible amount of great announcers at that particular time. And I'm sure I was skipping over a couple of guys, but you couldn't help but be influenced by it. And I think, you know, one of the things that Andy and I always tell young broadcasters is to be yourself. There's only one you. But I truly, truly believe that there's a lot of Pat Foley in me, Harry Carey, Jim Durham, down the line. And, I sit there, and even as I close out a broadcast now, it's funny because I use the Pat Foley line, which I found out later it wasn't even his line, but it's, "I hope you enjoyed the broadcast, and we know you enjoyed the outcome." We were coming back from a Hawk game about 20 years ago, my wife and I, and we were listening to the end of the Hawk game, and he says that, and my wife looked at me and said, "You stole it." And I said, "No, I didn't steal it. I'm just borrowing it." I mean, it's a totally different sport. And then when I saw Pat a few years ago, I told him about that story. He said, "Well, I stole it from Bob Elson or something." So, you know, it's one of those things where, I'm so happy. I'm happy for Pat, you know, that he's had 39 incredible years. I'm disappointed because as I listen to him and I still watch the Blackhawks pretty religiously, he still has his A game. And who knows what's going on, if he's being voluntold to move along or whatever. But it's a shame because when he and, Eddie Olczyk do games, it's still the best in the business. And I know our Tampa guys are really, really good, but it's hard to beat Pat Foley, that's for sure. And I wish him the best.
And he was at the top of his game Thursday night, Willsy, when he was saying goodbye. Dave Wills from Tampa Bay, the voice of the Rays. joins us here on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You know, I think it just underscored hearing Pat the other night say goodbye, the profound impact that announcers can have on the fan experience, on kids growing up who either want to get into broadcasting or just play the sport. And I just wonder, you mentioned some Chicago broadcasting icons. Who was it you tried to emulate? Who was it as you grew up in Oak Lawn that you wanted to be like when you were a professional?
Well, there's no doubt.
I know it wasn't Jack Trees. Wasn't Jack Trees.
There's no doubt it was Harry. I mean, everybody's yelling, holy cow, you're doing play-by-play of your wiffle ball game on the front lawn. I had neighbors after I got the Rays job, or the Devil Rays at the time, who called up and said, I knew you were going to be a broadcaster. I remember listening to you call wiffle ball games while you were playing on your front lawn. And so Harry was the guy, and then I was spoiled. I was so fortunate that my first year with Kane County that Jimmy Pearsall lived in Wheaton at the time and was working with the Cubs as an outfield instructor. And he came to a couple of Cougar games, and he came into my booth and did a few innings with me. And the first thing that he looked at me and he said, Dave, I listened to you yesterday, and my goodness, you wore me out. You were yelling in the first inning. You were yelling in the third inning. You were going crazy. He said, Harry told me all the time to kind of build up to the end of the game. Take it easy. Make it an easy listen. And he gave me some great advice and did a few games with him. And I'll never forget, Bruce, I think you and I were doing a show after Harry passed. And even though at that particular time, Jimmy Pearsall was working for the station you guys are on, and we were on another station, we had him on as a guest. And I remember as he was saying goodbye, he complimented me for moving on and being part at that time of the White Sox broadcast. It was one of the biggest compliments I can ever have. But you're right. I mean, you think about Harry, I think about him back at the old ballpark. He looked like he was having a blast. And then he made people want to come to the ballpark and have that same blast. And Andy and I try to do the same thing. We try to be educational and entertaining. And I think for 18 years, we've done a pretty decent job of it in St. Petersburg, and hopefully we can do it for another, I don't know if I can do it for another 18, but we'll see how long it goes. We're having a blast doing it.
Hey, Wilsey, talk a little bit to our great listening baseball audience and David, about the night that a riot almost broke out when we were doing a post-game show at U.S. Cellular Field at that particular point. Wilsey always did the pre- and post-game.
The manager? I didn't know we were going to need the Blues Brothers chicken wire around our stage. We were fortunate enough that we had good times in our Friday night bullpen bar gatherings, and a lot of times players would stop by. Burley would make a pretty regular appearance. Aaron Rowand at the time. Keith Folk, a number of guys, and there was a little bit of a stretch where old Terry Bevington would kind of make his way down there, and I don't know, there was one time where it was really getting kind of rowdy, and I think they had like a Fire Bevington banner going on in the background, and then he was starting to talk, and next thing you know, an ashtray came flying from the back of the room toward the stage, and that was a little ugly, but it was always kind of different when Boomer would come by and make a visit after a game. And like I said, I didn't know we were on the verge of having to call the Bertucci's and seeing if they could put some chicken wire around the stage like the Blues Brothers at Bob's Country Bunker.
Dave, it was always lively.
Wouldn't be an interview with Dave Wills if we didn't have a Joe Madden question, because for years you were the Joe Madden whisperer and the source of a lot of Madden questions because of your relationship with him when he was the manager of the Rays. Last night, as the manager of the Angels, Joe Madden walked Corey Seager with the bases loaded in the fourth inning to bring in a run, and thought that it would avoid a bigger inning. Now, it didn't work out at the time. The Angels come back and beat the Rangers, so I suppose that all's well that ends well. But I don't think it was a decision that made any sense to a lot of people. It made no sense to me, and I think it's one of those situations that, to kind of flip the Joe Madden thing, because it worked out doesn't make it a good decision. I mean, maybe it is outcome bias, but I don't know what Joe was thinking. Do you?
It's not the first time he did it. I think Joe did that as well back when we were playing the Texas Rangers when Josh Hamilton was going nuts and doing what he was doing. I think we walked him Is that right, Andy? Didn't we walk in with the bases loaded? Andy sitting in the booth with me, and we ultimately won the game because of that move. You know, Joe's going to do things that are unconventional. There's no doubt about it. And, it ended up working, like you said, outcome bias. You know, not everything Joe's going to do is going to be 100%, but at that time, he probably felt, and he had the information at hand that said, you know, this is our best option.
Well, Z, we appreciate you joining us so much. Give our best to Andy. And
they did win the game.
I'm sorry, you had cut out for a couple seconds there.
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, but ultimately they won the game, just like the Cub fans that I saw last night that said, well, Joe almost blew it in Game 7. Well, you know what? You guys are still walking around with a World Series championship from 2016, right? So
it
must have worked out pretty good. But thanks. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me, man. This was great.
Thanks, Dave. Good stuff. Dave Wills, the voice of the Rays, pride of Oak Lawn and Elmhurst College. Good Chicago baseball guy, Bruce. A lot of good memories there. That Joe Madden thing was a bit bizarre, though. Come on. I know it worked out, but that was as strange of a decision given the circumstances. It's April. Fourth inning.
Is that any different than Lou Piniella walking Andre Dawson five times in a game intentionally?
I think that's another bizarre decision, I suppose, to use one bizarre decision to justify another. I don't think makes either one of them smart or right.
Here's the old baseball adage, okay? And it applies here, maybe, David. Every game, when pitchers and catchers get together and they have the pitchers meeting with the pitching coach, they look at the lineup and they go, they look at one guy, whoever is hot or whoever is, you know, burning up the league at that particular time, and they go, this is the guy that we're not going to allow to beat us. And every manager, when he prepares for a game, has that same thought. There is a guy from, you know, X inning on or situation on that you're not going to allow to beat us. Seager's been very hot. Okay, so this was, in Joe's mind, I'm going to give up one run. I'm not going to give up four, okay, at this point. And that was the thinking. I'll text him later in the day today, and next week we'll talk a little bit about it, or we'll have Joe on, and he'll talk about some of these decisions. But, again, I think it's the thing I like about it is it's decisive, it's controversial, and it's done by somebody that has the wherewithal and the experience to get away with it. If a rookie manager or a second-year manager did something like that, he would be in the owner's office, in the president's office of the team the next day trying to explain, right?
Yeah.
But it's Joe blanking Madden.
And to Joe Madden's credit, post-game, his explanation said, number one, he wanted to avoid the big inning. But number two, quote, and just to stir up the group, quite frankly. I mean, there's part of me that always will respect the nonconformist in Joe Madden. And the fact that we are talking about it this morning and they're talking about it in baseball cities everywhere, and they're looking at this strategy and they're evaluating the metrics and all of these things are true. And Joe Madden, once again, has accomplished one thing. He's made us think. And Joe Madden consistently did that, whether it was in Tampa or Chicago and now Anaheim. He makes you think about things, and I don't agree with the decision, but I have given it a lot of thought, and I understand that point of view, but I just think it was a bad decision.
Well, he was going to bring Chapman in the game too, but he doesn't have him on the team at this point. So
somewhere Kyle Hendricks cringed.
You know what? Two nights ago, he walked the bases loaded, and Boone had to take him out of the game. So it's not always a great situation for any manager. But, you know, again, I think that's the beauty of baseball, isn't it? That, like you said, we're talking about this, a game that really has no impact on Chicago at all, other than Joe won a World Series here, and Joe had some great teams here, and Joe had a great impact here, and will forever probably be talked about.
Well, we are going to keep the interesting conversation going when we come back. Willie Harris, the Cubs' third base coach, he also is from the same hometown as Jackie Robinson, and he will talk about what yesterday meant to him here inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Having a lot of fun this morning talking Sox, Cubs, everything going on in the world of baseball. Had a good conversation with Dave Wills, the voice of the Rays. David Haugh, Bruce Levine here until 11. Bruce, we talked to him about Pat Foley because in Chicago broadcasting, this was a big moment this week. 39 years in the booth for Pat Foley calling Blackhawks games. And as we wait for Willie Harris here, the Cubs third base coach, to join us, wanted to get your perspective as somebody who has been here for all of those seasons and obviously is in a position better than I am to put into context just what Pat Foley meant to Chicago sports broadcasting.
Well, first of all, just getting to know Pat over the years, you can't find a more engaging, interesting, and a caring guy. He's just a wonderful guy who, growing up around here and, being a part of the Chicago fabric for all these years, it's just it's hard for me to see him go because, as Dave Wills said before when he was on with us, it's difficult to see a guy leave it when he's at the top of his game. He's still an outstanding broadcaster. I think there was a disconnect. I believe that the professional way that the Hawks handled it, and more importantly, Pat Foley handled it, was admirable. Not to make things ugly in the last year that he was here, but damn, when someone's that good, why do you want him to go? Why wouldn't he continue? But nonetheless, I will always cherish my friendship with Pat Foley, and the idea that he is an iconic broadcaster, a historic broadcaster, not only in Chicago, but in NHL history as one of the top broadcasters ever.
Yeah, baseball provides us, we always refer to it as the soundtrack of summer, whether it's Pat Hughes here on The Score and all the years with the Cubs and certainly Steve Stone, and there are icons in the sport, and it's easy to come up with examples. Harry Carey, Jack Brickhouse, Hawk Harrelson, these are great names and great memories, you have when you hear those names and start to recall those voices. And I think Pat Foley's in that same company. A lot of people put him among the tops of any list of Chicago sports icons in terms of broadcasting. And he just went out in a very classy way, regardless of the circumstances, which I agree with you, aren't ideal. I don't think goodbyes are ever they can be seamless, but I don't, and without controversy and without questions. I'm not sure this is one of those situations, but yeah, good for Pat Foley in the way that he went out. It was a classy farewell. Eddie Olczyk handled himself in a way that was great, and yeah, it was great to hear Dave Wills kind of reminisce about Pat Foley as well, and you as well, Bruce, because I know you went way back with Pat.
Yeah, just a terrifically fun guy. I remember even going back, 30 years ago when he would come on and talk on the old Evergreen stations, the Loop, and go on with Steve and Gary and Jonathan Brandmeier and Kevin Matthews. He was terrific. He was a perfect foil for them and a perfect guy to join in on the fun. He always, let's just say, beyond his great broadcasting skills, Pat Foley always got it.
Well put. And our next guest does as well, and we'll go to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find one of only two Major League Baseball players ever born in Cairo, Georgia. That's Willie Harris, the Cubs third base coach. Good morning, Willie. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing well, doing very well. The other one, obviously, is Jackie Robinson, and that's why I mentioned it, because of that significance, Willie, and I enjoyed what you had to say earlier this week about what yesterday represented to you, and I just wondered, as you reflect now a day later, how special was yesterday, and how would you put this week into context?
Well, for me personally, yesterday was huge. I took it all in during the national anthem, just taking into consideration what Jackie went through back in those tough times when he had to go out and not only play baseball but perform at a high level under such great pressure. It was a very humbling moment for me, and I'm very appreciative of what Jackie did for the game, and I take it all in.
You know, Willie, and again, great having you on with us. Appreciate it so much. I heard you with Taylor McGregor from Marquee yesterday do a pregame interview with him. I thought you were really hard on yourself because you said that at that time, and I'll let you relate it again, that you didn't really have a good feel for Jackie Robinson until one of your teachers in high school asked you to do a story on Jackie, and that was only it was when you were 17 years old. I think you were hard on yourself because, in reality, although he's the most famous person to come from Cairo, Georgia, he wasn't raised there. They moved to California very quickly, and he was born and raised in L.A.
Correct. But the thing with that entire statement, Bruce, is it's not that, you know, I didn't know until that age. But, I mean, any kid around the country should know who Jackie Robinson is at an early age and not 17 years old. Whether he grew up in California, whether he grew up in Alabama, Cairo, doesn't matter. The significance that he played in the game of baseball and our country, I think kids should be learning about it in their history classes all over the country. That's what I meant by what I said. It was a shame of me learning about him as a 17-year-old only because my teacher – understood and knew the passion that I had for the game of baseball.
And Willie, you are the Cubs third base coach, so I imagine that part of your aspirations include being a manager one day. And I think that you are certainly somebody that you could point to your qualifications and say that makes a lot of sense. You look around Major League Baseball, there are only two black managers, Dave Roberts and Dusty Baker. And I just wonder how you consider how difficult that is with your own goals and how would you articulate what your goals are moving forward in terms of becoming a manager?
Well, for me, I think it's one of those things where I have to, go through the process, bide my time. I really do feel like that opportunity will present itself down the road at some point. Being able to be considered for the Chicago White Sox managerial job last year, just to go through that interview process was really huge for me. And just understanding that, I'm not looking for a handout just because I'm African American. Hey, we need an African American manager. Let's give it to Willie Harris. No, I want to get that opportunity because I've earned it. I want to get that opportunity off of my merits. And I think I'm able to lead a major league clubhouse. And I think I have the ability to connect with my players, and I know I have the ability to communicate with the media and with the staff. All of those boxes are checked, and now it all just boils down to an opportunity. And I think you look around the league, like you look at the Tony La Russas and the Dusty Bakers, they're really good managers. Someone had to give them an opportunity for them to get to that point.
Willie, when you look at the 2022 team, you have a lot of new players and a ton of new players since last summer on this club. The one thing that I think when I talk to Cub fans I hear about is, they miss the superstars like Baez and Rizzo and Bryant, but the enthusiasm that this team plays with is something that caught their attention last year and is catching their attention right now. Can you talk a little bit about the coachability of this team and the way that some of these guys respond to what you and David Ross and the other coaches put on their plate?
I mean, coming to the ballpark, I tell you what, it's a lot of fun coming to the ballpark and seeing Big Frank the Tank just smiling and looking over and seeing Modgel and all these guys. These guys are coming to the ballpark to play. Not saying that Baez and KB and Rizzo and those guys didn't do that, but it's just a different feeling. It's a different feeling coming into the clubhouse as far as the energy level. These guys are hungry. These guys are excited, and they're baseball players. They want to play the game. And they understand the situation that we're in most of the time throughout the course of the game, what needs to be done here. Do we need a home run here? Do we need to drive a ball oppo here to move a guy over? These guys understand, and they've been buying into what we've been putting out there for them, and hopefully it continues, and we continue to play well.
Joined by Willie Harris, the Cubs third base coach here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So you go to the clubhouse every day, Willie, and there's energy and there's excitement, and you got players who are trying to prove something, who are hungry. How does that translate to your own job on the base paths, kind of navigating the traffic there? Are you more likely to be somewhat aggressive with a team built with guys like that, or does that not have that carryover effect?
Well, when I come to the ballpark, I bring the energy every day anyways. So when I see players who have the same energy and the same passion that, you know, they're out there running the bases, they're getting good secondary leads, they know where the defenders are, it makes my job a lot easier. And I tell the guys this here in the clubhouse, the only time that I'm a little hesitant coaching third base is when I have Big Frank out there. Big Frank is not fleet of foot, right? So I have to be smart in those situations. And I understand I'm going to make mistakes, but I have to make those mistakes aggressively. I want to be labeled as an aggressive third base coach and make other teams make plays. And from a base running point of view, that's really how you play the game. You take advantage of other teams' mistakes and lazy play, and hopefully that can put us in a situation to win ball games throughout the course of the season.
Your impressions of Seiya Suzuki and the time that you've had with him so far. Obviously, he's had a wonderful start to the season, but you're also not only a third base coach, but an outfield coach. Your thoughts about Suzuki's overall game and your first impressions?
Super professional guy. He understands the game. He knows how to play the game, and he's very funny. He's a very funny guy. He has a great personality. I think he fits right in with the Chicago Cubs and our clubhouse. And I love seeing the smile on his face every day. Look forward to seeing him today, actually, and just, you know, helping him understand and get more comfortable with our culture and the way we do things over here on the baseball field. I know he told me that he wished, through his interpreter, he wished it was like this in Japan. And I think he's really happy with the way, you know, Rossi's treated him and everybody with the Chicago Cubs have treated him. And I think he's going to be a big piece for this puzzle.
Quickly before we let you go, Willie, when you look at Nick Madrigal at second base, as a former second baseman, where is he in his development? And defensively, how would you evaluate him now?
I mean, Madrigal, I mean, you know, he had a serious injury last year. So I think he's still kind of battling that a little bit. But he's definitely a ball player. Turns the double play really well, makes a lot of contact at the plate. Really looking forward to seeing him get hot. And it's hard to get hot when it's cold. You know, it's 30 degrees up here in Colorado. So these guys are finding a way to get their hits, and they're finding a way to put the ball in play. And I'm looking forward to the warm months and the summer months of Wrigley Field Cubs baseball.
Willie, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck today and the rest of this season. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Willie Harris,
thanks.
Cubs third base coach, the pride of Cairo, Georgia, the same hometown as Jackie Robinson, and certainly yesterday meant a little bit more maybe to somebody like that, Bruce. He's a terrific communicator, and you can see why players like having him around, and you can see why he's on a path to become a manager one day.
Right. You know, I've had the good fortune of knowing Willie since he was a young player with the White Sox back in the early 2000s, and 2005 during that championship run, and he was always always a guy, overachieved, stayed in the big leagues, I think, for a good 12 years. You know, we talked to Josh Harrison earlier about persevering and staying with it. You know, that's maybe not everyone's a star, maybe not everyone's a superstar making $10 million a year, but that's something I admire the most about baseball players, is taking talent that isn't superstar talent and staying in the game for a long period of time. It says a lot about you as a person as well as a player.
We have another segment left. We're going to talk about what Marcus Stroman had to say about Jackie Robinson Day, as well as Bob Kendrick, who we friend of the program from the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City, when we come back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And the constant fear, the constant death threats that he had to deal with left and right. I mean, it's incredible that he was able to go out there and perform as he did. So, like I said, I can't give enough thanks to that man.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hoffman's flying here for a final segment. That was Marcus Stroman talking about Jackie Robinson Day and the significance of it yesterday before he pitched. Marcus Stroman gave up, went four innings and gave up six runs for the Cubs in a loss to the Rockies. But it was a day that he marked in talking. That was a terrific interview with Zach Zaidman on the pregame, Bruce, and it reflected just how yesterday reflected and meant a lot of different things to a lot of different people in a very profound way.
Yeah, indeed. And again, people who don't have the historical content don't understand that wasn't always Jackie Robinson Day, and it really took until Bud Selig became commissioner for it to become officially a commemorated day in Major League Baseball in 2005. It started under Bud's leadership for Major League Baseball, I think 1997-98. But Jackie Robinson passed away in, I believe it was in 1972. So a long time in between drinks for baseball to do anything officially. Historically, another interesting aspect, David, is that on May 18th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson played his first game at Wrigley Field in Chicago, 12-year-old Bud Selig was sitting there with his mother and his cousin, and they took the train down to Wrigley Field to watch this historic event at Wrigley Field. And 58 years later, he was the one that instigated the idea that there should be a Jackie Robinson Day every year to commemorate what his historical presence had for this country and this sport and really all of us.
And what a day it was out at Dodger Stadium, certainly, that I think as special as any place in Major League Baseball. Jackie Robinson's son was part of the festivities and the ceremony pregame, and I think that when you look at the 75th anniversary of breaking the color barrier, no better place than Dodger Stadium. Certainly that franchise recognized him as much as anybody. And Bruce, though, throughout the game, throughout baseball, and one of our friends, Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, was on our show yesterday with Mully and Haw in the morning talking about what yesterday meant to Bob Kendrick.
Jackie Robinson reminds us of that. His breaking of the color barrier is so much bigger than the game of baseball. This was the beginning of the civil rights movement in this country. But we understand that there's still, like I said, work left to be done. A museum like ours helps bring this story to the forefront. And it helps you identify with those passionate athletes who, as I like to say, forged a glorious history in the midst of an inglorious time of American history. But ultimately, guys, they built that bridge that Jackie Robinson crossed over. And now Tim Anderson gets to cross over. And the other black players that you alluded to that are now, and not only the black players, but the brown players.
Really cool, Bruce. That was Bob Kendrick, to think that this national awareness and certainly the commemoration yesterday has this national focus and certainly but has this local impact with you have guys like Josh Harrison and Tim Anderson mentioned there, the only black double play combination in Major League Baseball. Very powerful images, very strong examples leading from the front.
Yeah, you're right about that, David. It is a powerful image. The part that I don't like is that the numbers continue to dwindle with 6.8% of Major League players are African American. And, you know, Bob has alluded to it, a lot of the other African American athletes, and it doesn't take you to be African American to understand that a lot of the young athletes are playing other sports, and they're playing basketball, they're playing football, they're playing soccer, they're playing a lot of other sports, and it's unfortunate that more of them aren't. I know Major League Baseball is tempted with their programs, and the Cubs and White Sox in their special programs for developing youth baseball in the Chicago areas. Do as much as they can to get them out there. But it's just, you know, it's going the other way. I think it peaked at around 23% in 1980, right. That 23% of all players were African-American then. And, you know, 42 years later, you know, it's dropped two thirds. That's really unfortunate. I worry about that because you want all the great athletes, regardless of race, playing in the games that you love. And, you know, baseball's always been my passion. I love the other sports, but to me, baseball is the one thing that is the best. Obviously, we've seen a lot of players from Latin America come here. Which, if you add up the African American numbers and the Latin American numbers, it's almost 40% of the players are of players of color. So from that perspective, it's a little different.
Friday was a very special day around Major League Baseball, commemorating, you know, the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier. But it's got to be more than just one day. I think we all agree it's got to be a commitment that is beyond just one day, and the awareness has to be heightened as well, and change has to be made and continue to make progress there. But that was.
Hey, guess who's reunited next?
Yeah,
we are reunited, and it feels so good.
Bruce, stick to the jingles. Okay. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, there. Saturday Suckage coming up. Cubs baseball tonight on the score, 6:35. Thank you, Josh Harrison. Thank you, Dave Wills. Thank you, Willie Harris. Thank you, Bruce, for setting everything up today.
And thank you, Cesar, for doing a tremendous job producing our show. We will talk to you next week. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website at 670thescore.com. David, great job. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bruce. I'll be on Mollenhoff Monday morning, 5 o'clock, breaking down Cubs and Sox in the Bulls playoffs. Thanks for listening. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.